So now we're getting into kind of the last hour of this program. First, we're going to start. Come on up, Jeff. Jeff and Christine, come on up. First, we're going to have a quick discussion up here, quickly amongst friends. Boy, girl. That's how we're supposed to do it. Welcome, John. Thank you. So we wanted to kind of set up. Welcome, Jacqueline. Welcome. Boy, girl. All right. There we go. The panel is assembled. So we wanted to talk a little bit about essentially our supply chain for entertainment. And of course, the two presentations before were heavy on the cloud, right? Because we all know where we're going. But ultimately, it's about securing the chain. It's about getting our acts collectively together as a group, and also addressing some serious issues in terms of that chain. Where are your weakest links? What's going on? But to start, let's take a moment and introduce ourselves so that everybody knows who you are and what you do. It'll be ladies first, and then gentlemen.
Go ahead, Christine.
Which lady first? And then you last?
I'm last.
That's a bummer.
It happens.
I'm Christine Thomas. I'm with Dolby Laboratories. I'm a Senior Director of Worldwide Technical Operations and Strategic Initiatives.
Awesome. Thank you, Christine.
I'm Jacqueline Canag. I'm the Executive Director of Content Security at Paramount Pictures.
Hi, Jacqueline.
And I'm John Trishek. I'm EVP of BTI Studios. We do language localization. Just joining this company, I think I'm about 6 weeks into heading up the US and OTT operations in Burbank, California.
Excellent. And I'm so delighted to have you all here. We had a great panel prep call, and that's what I'm referencing on my phone, is just the whiteboard that came out of that. But ultimately, you're all experts in your own right, in the sense that nobody's really a noob up here. I think we all have collectively, God knows how many decades of experience. I don't think we even want to say that. But I think it's important for us to talk about, essentially, when you talk about cloud and distribution, it ends up being a kind of a different paradigm. Because I think when we were in the good old days of physical, it was so much easier to keep things segmented and separated. So with the cloud, more players are in more buckets and more people are in more places than ever. And it really makes for a kind of a fluid experience, obviously as evidenced by the cloud diagram that we just saw in the last presentation. So first I'd like to start from a content holder perspective, right? Sorry, Jacqueline. What are the things that you've seen in most recently that have changed in terms of how you approach your traditional, your vendors and your service providers as they relate to cloud? And Christine, I'm gonna have you follow up as well.
I feel like that was not on the panel prep call.
Well, by the way,
I'm just teasing.
Okay, sorry.
Try and lighten the mood before the beer starts.
Yes.
So I would say, I guess over the last few years, I think it's just the sheer volume of options that are out there. And especially, you know, at Paramount, we deal really heavily with our production and our post-productions. And we actually go out and meet with everybody. And I think there's just so many options out there for them to choose from, that making sure that they're actually doing things correctly and leveraging the right tools. So, you know, we're okay with, you know, cloud burst rendering and visual effects, but it just has to be done correctly. So it's just a matter of, you know, really working with all the different vendors to make sure what they're implementing is done right the first time, and we're not hearing about it when there's been a leak or a breach. And I think it just, it's a different level of knowledge you have to have, and different level of, you know, people you're able to bring into your groups to support the cloud. And I think that's just been a growing aspect for the last, especially the last 12 months at Paramount.
Sure. And Christine, how, you know, in the good old days of public media, right, there was a lot of secure delivery of discs into this private, awesome screening room. But I'm assuming that a lot of that is done through the cloud. Do you want?
It's all done electronically now, actually, or let's say by and large. And actually, I think it's better. I think there's actually a terrific amount of control there now. Where it was much more difficult before. It was a matter of physical space to store. It was a matter of, you know, human beings being consistent, which we are not. So I actually think that the logical controls that we can have in place around digital asset transit, whether it's you know, access or whether it's actually transferring media is a win.
Well, and ultimately also, you know, these workflows are getting increasingly complex. It's insane, right? When you think of how simple it kind of really was. And John, also drawing on your, obviously, your years of experience at Fox, I mean, is this something that you're seeing? You know, I personally don't think there's an end, but I mean, is this something that, also drawing on your previous experience, something you can talk about?
Yeah, well, I had spent 20 years at Fox, and we, part of my remit with Fox was to take us into a file-based distribution world, and you definitely get the controls in place. When you look at us as a vendor supplying localization services, you know, traditionally when you have to dub or subtitle content, you usually have a relationship where you're working with somebody directly in the market. And that and the exposure now and the demand for content to be supplied very quickly in many languages, basically overnight, You have to have more controls in place, and you know, by having everything centralized, you know, in the cloud, I think we heard a lot of great presentations in regard to this whole concept. Then you know, you have less things that are distributing around the ecosystem and the world there. So there's definitely less to worry about when you have that centralized control.
Sure, and you're dealing with a global workforce. You know. Everybody on this, right? We're all dealing with global workforces now, it seems, right? Even the smallest of the small. I mean, how do you ensure that you've got a global security stance, posture? You know, is it just training? Is it education, just general education? You know, I'm just curious from, you know, just in terms of examples, because I think also you three do very different things, and Jacqueline, we're going to talk about production for sure. But when you think about the distribution side of the business and how much needs to happen in that increasingly shorter window, you know, I think it's a part of something to address, and I assume it's also around from Dolby as well.
Yeah, it's a lift. I mean, again, we're still evolving. There's still quite a bit of work that's done physically. There still are physical assets. And there are still, as I said, there are still human beings, right? So it's a lift to ensure that you have a really consistent global policy that's implemented consistently. It is a terrific amount of communication and training, and no, not generalized, quite specific. But it's also an appreciation from experience and just value recognition perspective of the employees. You know, having that deep appreciation for what that risk means and trying to convey to someone who doesn't have experience in our field that it's the monetary value of it almost can't be emphasized enough, because I don't know what end there is, right? The end is, thank you very much for your time. it's a lift. But as I say, actually, as you were speaking, John, you know, we couldn't do the volume of work that we do today without these digital solutions. There's no way. I'm really impressed by what I know we were doing physically when I was with Technicolor some time ago. This is a gnat. I don't have a good kick. I'm sorry. But I'm really impressed with the volume of physical work that we were doing, but I can't imagine that we could have kept up. And I mean, obviously we didn't, thankfully, because we had digital solutions. So there's that aspect of it. And then in terms of having a global workforce, you only truly have a global workforce that's functioning globally if there is electronic delivery or access and automation and those controls in place. So from my perspective, we can only evolve and truly be globalized as any company if we do have a digital solution.
If I can just jump in there for a second. When I started in the industry, you know, an urgent broadcast was about 12 months into the future, and you'd get a letter from a customer basically saying that we need a print to create our telecine and all that sort of thing. But you know, we've heard about kind of financial impact when it comes to piracy and to all of this here. It's also a pretty ugly situation internally in an organization when all of this goes down. And just notwithstanding the executives that suddenly get involved and jump into, you know, panic mode from the top of the studio down, or you know, your direct executive management. It's also just an incredibly, you know, wasteful process. And I think we heard about it in an earlier presentation in terms of the whole planning concept. it's just such an important thing to do and to think about. And, you know, I think a lot of times thinking about protection and this sort of thing, we get into the technology piece, you know, and I like to think of that maybe as kind of the architecture of the organization. But there is also, there's the routines that you have in the organization too that you need to put in place for, you know, appropriate content protection. But then it does come down to the people. Do you have people that understand the process and that are going to support all of your policies and this sort of thing? And then ultimately, too, I think it's the culture. You have to have a culture where content protection and security is part of the regular conversation within the groups.
You know, I also look at the other, you know, the other thing that you also throw into the mix is as we get to this distribution piece, you know, the windows are shrinking. And it's not as something like, you know, oh, hey, we're contemplating. But when it happens, you're essentially undoing a lot of process and trying to do it a lot quicker. And I know the cloud facilitates, ease of doing that quickly. But I think it's still a huge impact when you're used to having 90 days to do something and then somebody says, oh, we're cutting back to 60. Oh, we're cutting back to 30. It's insane.
I'd love to have 30 days. That'd be great. I think my team would, that would be amazing. We could take some time off. But it also introduces complexities, and we shouldn't minimize that. And you mentioned some of the slides that were up earlier. It does introduce complexities as well. And so that, Jackie made a very, very good point, but the depth of knowledge and breadth of knowledge and experience that you have in order to implement that appropriately and leverage the right controls has increased significantly, and I think that's an important point.
I mean, one thing I would add too is that, like, I've seen, especially here at Paramount, where as the windows are shrinking and things are being reorged and moved around, people that were never dealing with more sensitive assets all of a sudden are. So, you know, historically we might have just trained the folks that were really dealing with the more secure areas of the workflows, and now we're kind of rolling out to everybody who needs to be trained regardless of what you do, because today you might be an assistant in finance, and you know, tomorrow you can be in the marketing side, or you go from home entertainment to the theatrical, where your group now does both. So, like, we have to kind of really build that security culture and make sure that it's a part of everybody's jobs and not just key people across the business.
Sure, and let's stay on that, because, you know, the idea is to start that process as early as possible, and what better place to start, obviously, even Greenlight, regardless of production. What are some of the things that you've been, you travel the world, you fabulously travel the world, look at these very frantic sets, and it's very creative, but there are a lot of people on these sets. So, you know, what are some of the examples that you've seen where it's like you're not only influencing them to say, hey, here's some training, but then you're reinforcing it by actually being a person there instead of, oh, that's the corporate.
Yeah. Well, I guess one thing that kind of worked out well for me was that about 2 years ago, our TV group really started going. And we don't do television like most other studios do because we don't have our own network. So we're making shows that are big budget for Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, that are pretty much like mini movies. And I had the opportunity to kind of start a TV program from scratch, which really gave me time to like learn and figure things out, because there was, you know, one show the first year. Now we're up to like seven this year. And a lot of what it was just like trying to learn how everybody's operating, realizing that what we were doing on the feature side wasn't going to cut it, that we had to get in really early, actually go to all the prep meetings, just be available to people so that they knew you were an asset and not something that just were coming here from an audit perspective, checking boxes. It really enabled people to open up to me and like tell me about things that they weren't comfortable with, that they were being asked to do by either their department heads or that by, you know, other people within the production that were more senior, and allow us to fix it in a way that we've now implement that across all of our productions. But each one is really kind of a separate thing, so you have to treat them all very differently. And some have completely different challenges. I mean, as great as cloud is, we have a project right now that it just, the amount of data that they're shooting on a daily basis, just it can't be supported with normal digital workflows. And we're, you know, filming in areas where there aren't really high-speed bandwidth. You're like, how do you get out 30 terabytes of data from a day from a country where you doesn't have you know, maybe not even a gig infrastructure, and how do you do that securely? So you're almost then looking backwards at like, well, how did we do this back in the day, and how can we then make it better and faster? So
back in the day wasn't very long ago either, by the way. It's so, 2012. So easy to forget, but you're absolutely right. How did we do it 5 years ago? But sorry, there's just a point I wanted to make about what you were saying. It's absolutely right. This is my background, is varied as ours all over are. I find it easier to be a business sponsor and pull security in and use that as a driver for compliance within our own teams than I found being an officer and coming, as you said, coming in to imply that requirement. And I'm seeing that change. I know that you do that. I mean, you're partnering with the business and participating with them versus coming in with a control set that has to be implemented because this is the corporate requirement. That's just my take, but driving it from the business.
John, from your side, I mean, how much leeway? I mean, obviously you work with multiple studios on multiple projects, trying to get things, you know, through good, awesome, excellent quality work and delivered on time. Do you see? It's hard. Also, I know you're new, but I mean, ultimately, do you? When you were at Fox, do you see them coming in and saying, "Oh, hey, by the way, this is our minimum baseline"? I apologize because I know you've just transferred over. But when you were at Fox, I'm sure you were actually asking these vendors, "Hey, this is our minimum set."
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's interesting to come from the other side and coming from the industry and now being on the vendor side. And I go back to what I said earlier in terms of the disparate locations that traditionally have existed in the localization world. It's such a critical part of the process now, you know, for distributors to get their content anywhere. And what we're doing and how we're approaching it is becoming kind of a centralized operation with 21 locations around the globe where we can tie all of this stuff together and looking at creating the standards across the platform in terms of, you know, the policy and in terms of the culture and how we regularly take this as a very serious and important part of our jobs. And it's not just about the media itself, the AV and all of that sort of stuff, but it goes right down to the scripts. You know,
sure.
A script leak is just as bad as a video leak. It goes right down to the storylines as well. You know, and if you're dealing with a world that has multiple freelancers in it, you know, this is where we take our critical projects that we're doing for, you know, folks like Netflix or Amazon or Fox. You know, if it's pre-release content or anything of that nature, we have our internal resources that can manage this according to the policies and guidelines that we set forth and to ensure that we're taking it seriously.
Yeah, and that's also something also that's living, because as things come on, like you said, you know, 2012 seems like light years away, right? 5 years is like, whoa, 6 years, it's almost exponential. So very interesting, you know, Jacqueline, on productions, you deal with a ton of freelancers. I mean, it's the bulk, and usually creative freelancers, sometimes frustrated creative freelancers, right? I should have been a DP. How do you deal with the people out there that kind of come and go, and also may not just be working on your production, they may be working for others?
I think what we try to do is we try to make the security piece relatable not just to our production, but to their everyday lives. So when we talk to everybody at the production meeting about, you know, picking secure passwords and device encryption and making sure that their Facebook settings are correct, that they're not giving out all their information, I try to relate it to things that could impact them directly. You know, if they really do think of our movie, like, they would their bank account. Like, would they pick a crappy password on their bank account? Probably not, so they shouldn't do that for the platforms they're using for ours. And kind of making them aware of, you know, information out there around breaches and that we're just there. I think an interesting thing, not just with freelancers, but also sometimes with the younger cast, and it's happening, I would say, more and more as we have these big shows, you know, Netflix, where they're, you know, kids are all of a sudden becoming overnight Instagram famous, and they're not being prepared for that. You know, their child managers, they've had their whole careers, are not saying, oh, by the way, now your show, you're going to go from 5,000 Instagram followers to 80, maybe you should update all your passwords, because kids are not prepared to get hacked. They don't know how to handle that type of stuff, and that can cause huge problems on set with delays. So it's really trying to talk to not just the freelancers on the show, but the cast, the cast's parents, just trying to make sure that everybody that's involved is taking it seriously, because like their email address they're using for us might be the same they're using on a Fox show or somebody else, and we can't just give everybody a corporate email or they'd have a 30 to check, and we all know what happens when you have 30 passwords, they're all going to be bad, so.
Well, the irony also is, you know, we do need to move our business forward, and now it's like, now every set is its own little mini network, and, you know, so we have to, and it could be, like you said, remote, it could be someplace that has good internet, has bad internet, but there are people that are trying to hack this. I mean, you know, from a hacking perspective, do you feel that it's a necessity in the sense of we have to always be 100%, and again, it also depends on the production, right? Because I assume a reality TV show is a heck of a lot less anxious about something like that rather than a big budget title like a Transformers or something like that. I mean, do you deal with that around on set when you're going out and visiting these productions? Or, you know, is it pen testing vulnerability and just like a regular enterprise?
We are starting to do that now, but I mean, it's funny your comment about the reality, because I've been pulled in to help our parent company a little bit with one of their reality shows, and they are just as concerned sometimes because, you know, like in some of these more contest-based reality shows, things are leaking out on websites like Reality Steve, and there's a whole other slew of them, where, you know, it could impact the show just like it would on a plot point on another major TV show. So the lines are really getting blurred there. But I think we are really trying to start doing like pen testing on set. It depends, again, on the show. You kind of like luck out in the first season if there's nothing that anyone's ever heard of, but by the second or third season, you know, there's a lot more attention and scrutiny on it.
And Christine, you know, from a Dolby perspective, I'm assuming when you have a product like an Atmos, right, or Dolby Vision, something like that, you're right up in the front in production, in post, making sure that you're in sync along the way.
Yeah, we are. So my team includes part of my team is responsible for any of the internal content creation contribution that we provide at Dolby. You know, while we're seeking the market with our technologies, we also do the quality assurance testing and review, and of course we do the internal screens and QC work. So absolutely, we're involved in sometimes the production itself, depending on how, you know, that individual title, but certainly post-production focused heavily both in our facilities and also with our partners. So what we're trying to do, one of the things that we're trying to do in addition to, you know, educating and you know, promoting the value of it and the requirement for it and the necessity of it, is also move the data less. As much as we can minimize that, as much as we can control that, but access versus transfer, we have teams, you know, in London, in Royal Witten Bassett in New York and Los Angeles. I'm always amazed that in Royal Witten Bassett, England, which is about 2 hours outside of London, in the middle of a beautiful country, very quiet, they have almost zero physical media, and they do a terrific amount of our mastering work. So we can get there, and we can deal digitally. But the other thing is, you know, the automation that they've put in place, and then again, you know, more locally in Los Angeles, not moving the data. In London, in fact, you could come into the Dolby facility and access content at the studio or at the post house without actually having to move it. So we've employed various solutions depending on the nature of what that little business is. And that's what we continue to try to focus on, is just minimizing that risk by limiting the transfer itself.
I knew this would go fast. We only have like 5 more minutes, but does anybody have a question out there? Because we have experts up here. So if you do want to pitch that, please raise up your hand. We put infinite in parentheses here on our, right? How do you feel, and John, this could be a good question for you, but please chime in. How do you feel about the proliferation of the distribution channels, right? So now it's like, hey, we're making everything in the cloud. Oh, P.S., we're putting it out in the cloud. And, you know, regardless of sell-through and that whole business, I mean, obviously streaming is the wave of the future, knowing my 13 and my 10-year-old. And it's, you know, it's UGC, it's, you know, free on YouTube, it's subscription-based, it's ad-based. How do you feel about all those platforms in a sense of, and again, on the localization piece, you know, they should be able to adapt and accept some of these localization things that we are now currently doing for television and for home entertainment, right? To be able to offer it in all these different worlds. You feel that that's a promising?
Yeah, I think as we, as an industry, as we get our acts together in terms of the various parts of the supply chain, it actually is a positive thing in the future, from the standpoint that if you have your content that you're storing in the cloud, you know, you have these new distribution platforms that are also working in the cloud. I think that the opportunity exists to have some more standards in place that would allow you to tie these things together in a better way. And, you know, technology is a phenomenal thing when it's executed correctly and when there is standardization and when people are working together. Separate and apart from that, with what we're looking at and the evolution to things like the IMF format, you know, from our perspective, if we could limit the touch points in terms of assets in general from a localization perspective, if we're just dealing then with the various bits and pieces of the content that we're responsible for, whether it's a dubbed audio track or whether it's subtitled inserts or forced narratives, things like that, then we can also minimize the risk across the value chain. So I actually think it's a positive thing that we're moving toward, and you know, this whole industry is in upheaval, but it's to be expected that you're gonna have natural disruptions when the new things are emerging.
Well, and obviously, as evidenced, you know, there's still a robust box office, there's still a robust spend on that side. And when you take into account things like Amazon Prime, and you know, I mean, there's still a heck of a lot of spend going on out there. It's just not in the way that we've been used to since the inception of entertainment. And also, we're running out of time.
I was going to say, since my tee up the next panel as well, with the kind of explosion of content that's coming out of, you know, Amazon and Netflix, it's really going to put, you know, a bigger stress on the vendor side of things, because there might not, you should have enough vendors to be able to do all this like localization work if you're talking about the volume of products that are being created each year. So for us at the different studios, we can't keep up as it is with going out and doing all these security assessments. So you know, I think the timing is perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a great point, because the bottom line is it can be a very tedious process in terms of managing all the different aspects of the localization process. And studios that try to take that on themselves, or distributors that try to take it on themselves, they also may be getting into a bit of a pickle in terms of managing all this sort of stuff. And that's why I think we can, you know, provide the value and security in that whole regard.
Well, in the good old disc business, right, it was always the bottleneck. It'd be and prepping for Q4, and oh my lord, we just got, you know, offloading. I mean, it's a morph of the same problem, essentially, right? It's just, it's like a digital morph of that same problem, so.
Yes, now there's no Q4, it's always Q4.
It's always Q4. Another great, I've had all these great t-shirt slogans, it's always Q4. Don't be. anyways, we're out of time for this. The goal was also to set up the conversation that we're about to have. Jacqueline also is you're the chair of the technology committee. You're on the board of directors of CDSA, and she's also the chair of our technology committee that Christine sat down as well. John, I'm sure if there's a spot in there for you coming down the pipe. But ultimately, what Jacqueline does through the technology committee is provide feedback to our content holder board. We have about 15 companies. Joel Sloss is also one of the co-chairs back there. Joel Sloss, technology committee co-chair. But a critical piece, critical element in terms of feedback around some of the things that the board does on in the content owner place. So absolutely critical, and thank you for doing that for us. So warm thanks to everyone. Thank you so much.